Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today, our guest is Heather Mason, and Heather is the leader of the Minded Institute in the UK. Many of you know Heather from her amazing courses that usually focus on like neuropsychology, yoga therapy, mental health. She has built a big team of people that is helping to bring yoga therapy into basically healthcare arena in the UK. So what she's got going on now, and we'll talk briefly about this, is that people who have already graduated from, say, a yoga therapy degree, they can take a few extra courses that fill in the holes of what the yoga therapy degree did not cover and become a psychotherapist and essentially be a psychotherapist and a yoga therapist both. And then she has people that maybe do it the other way. Maybe they're coming from being a psychotherapist and they need the holes filled in to become a yoga therapist. But this is groundbreaking work. You cannot imagine how much work it is to get accredited in the university systems, to do all of the rubric that is required for grading and assessment, to bring it up to the standards of a college or university level. And I think for most of the field of yoga therapy, that has not happened yet. That is a whole nother step above where most schools are going. And she has about 40 people that are helping her to do that. Now, that was a really cool part of this episode, but where Heather and I actually kind of went off the beaten trail was to look at what makes her a great leader. How does she find herself in this position? What can the rest of us do to figure out our life purpose and our life path? And is it even possible to say, here's what I want to do 5 years from now and kind of take a linear line and walk towards it? Or is it more of an inside job where you're bringing yourself inward and listening to that still small voice within and just taking one step each day, step, step, step. And then, wow, one day you find yourself doing what you were brought here to do. So this episode has ended up being less about the Minded Institute and all the amazing things they're doing in the world, although we did cover that. And it became more about helping people to find their life purpose and what is the mechanism through which we can all move forward to be able to share our gifts in the world. So Heather has a lot of wisdom. She started on this path of service many, many years ago as a young woman in a Buddhist monastery with nuns and monks. And she has managed throughout the entire time to keep that heart of service and to keep truth within herself and integrity within herself and listening to her deep inner voice to know what to do next. What's the next step? And through that series of present moment, tiny decisions day by day by day, she has ended up doing something pretty miraculous. And I don't think that most people have the faith in themselves to live in that way. It's too scary. We want to be at the finish line and know it's going to be okay. And if I knew that that was going to work out, then I'd start walking in that direction. But as we see in this interview, that's not how it works. You don't get to see the finish line. You have to actually move towards something and have the courage to do that and the faith to do that in yourself and the universe or whatever you want to call it. And you don't know where you're going to end up. You don't know if it's going to work out. You just know you're staying true to yourself. You're staying present. You're listening. You're connected. And who knows where you will end up? It may be in the general direction you thought, but it may not. And so I hope you can enjoy this interview and stay with us on this step-by-step journey that unfolds, because we did not plan on talking about this. Like a lot of my interviews, I end up taking people off the beaten path. And, you know, if they're willing to go over there with me, I'll go. So it's really a beautiful interview. It's one that I will listen to again and again to remind myself what this journey of life is and what it means to be living our yoga. So let's go see Heather. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour Season 7. We are so happy that we can share this time together each week. It's a really important part of our week, and I hope that it is for you too. We also want to invite you to the Optimal State app for iPhone and for Android. Your first month is free. We're going to start offering meditation circles for new moon, for a full moon, for the solstices and the equinoxes. We're going to build a community around this app. So why not jump over to the iPhone store or the Android store, download the Optimal State app for free and start to join our community and start to have more resources in addition to the podcast. We'd love to see you over there. Welcome, Heather. We're so happy to have you here today. Thanks for coming a second time.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I know we just chatted briefly and it's been more than a year, but it's really lovely to be back.
I just can't believe where time goes. I don't know how you feel, but as I get older, it just seems to be speeding up. Like when I saw that we hadn't talked for a year, I was like, no, more than a year, like almost 15 months. Is that possible? Well, welcome. We're here now. And I want to do a check-in with you because you are, I think, one of the leaders, if not the leader, in the UK of what's happening in yoga and yoga therapy, especially for mental health. And I know that we have a lot of listeners from Europe, and I'm sure all the people in the United States, Canada, and beyond would love to hear what you're doing. So can you give us kind of a high-level update on what's been happening with Minded Institute?
So as usual, I feel like every 6 months, we look at an aspect of the Minded Institute and we say, we could do that better. So one of the things that we've done, I'm just going to note two smaller things and then, you know, one quite large one. Over the last year, we have aligned our marking system to the university system in the UK because, you know, we're moving in that direction. So that's been really interesting. And that's been incredibly challenging to do that.
We have to unpack that. We in the West don't, or in the United States don't know what systems are. We have no idea what that means.
So like the whole way, you know, like in the US, you have a rubric at a university that allows you to determine what grade a student gets. In this country, the process of determining that grade and all of the competencies that go into every single aspect of what you grade have to be really expressed in a very clear fashion so that there is equality and equity in that grading. And so what we've done for every single thing we assess is we've aligned it to the methodology that universities use to assess essays, to assess homework assignments. And then we have to train our team, because they're assessing things that are very specific, to use those methodologies. Because, you know, we are moving more and more into wanting to be a university course. That is our goal of ours. So we've done that. And another thing we did was we got the entire anatomy program and just started from scratch. And we have this amazing anatomy lecture called Haley Unwin. And I wanted us to remain in our scope of practice while making sure that our graduates were able to assess flexibility, strength, range of movement, and then based upon that, to bring forward what asanas would be useful, consider muscular skeletal conditions from that perspective, and very much move away from like teaching specific asanas, but instead, you know, moving into how do you assess those things? And then asanas are sort of like the pathway that you move into to help people to increase the strength, range of motion, and making very, very sure, because she's a physio, that we remain in the yoga therapy scope of practice. And that's been interesting because in this country, we don't have a delineation of exactly where one thing starts and one thing ends. So we're constantly discussing it. But the big thing we did, the really big thing, was that last spring, we launched the first psychotherapy program that follows on from a yoga therapy program in the world, and it's fully accredited. And you noted that we specialize in mental health, which is why we were able to do this, because although we focus on the gamut of different health conditions for which we believe yoga therapy to be efficacious for, mental health has been our starting point. So we have a lot of clinical skills built in, and we applied to an accreditation body, and they looked at it and they said, wow, you already have like so many foundational components of what would be taught in psychotherapy. Not to mention that the neuroscience piece is very high level. You need to add all these other things, though, for it to be considered a psychotherapy program in terms of contact hours over a year, and then all this other clinical work. So we took that on board, and then we added a bunch of other things. And then it was going to just be for our students, but we had a lot of interest externally. So we created a bridging course, which also allows external people from other yoga therapy accredited programs to join in. But they have to be assessed by us. They can't just join the bridging course. We have to know that they have some of the skills that we think are important. And so that's been really exciting. I don't think the same thing, though, could be done in the United States because you have different rules.
Wow. Well, those are three huge things. You said two small things and one big thing, but figuring out how the rubric to assess each thing on a university level scale, and then basically creating an entire assessment system for anatomy and yoga slash yoga therapy. I mean, those are two huge things. And then having basically a yoga therapy slash psychotherapy degree. Come on, girl. Wow, that's amazing. How do you move through the world, Heather? Do you kind of vision something and then figure out, okay, that's the big vision and here's how I break down the steps and get there? Do you let things come to you and then you're like, no, that's a good one, I'll take that one? Like, what's your process?
It's mixed. So I just really want to say, like, this is not Heather. This is the Minded Institute. And over the years, the team has become bigger, more robust, and more expert, you know, field experts. So like for the marking system, I have somebody on my team who has a degree in educational development of organizations, for example. And she basically said to me last year, this is a necessary stage to go forward. And she had the skills. Things like the psychotherapy training, those are just moments of like insight for me. But often there are people who spark that. Like there are at least three people who had different discussions with me when I finally was like, oh, we need to do this. And then sometimes, Amy, I'm walking in the park, and that seems to be the time where I have these insights the most. And out of absolutely nowhere, something arises. But these days, you know, I have only so many people that work for me full time, but about 40 people that work for me part time. And so I have so much wisdom being fed back to me.
That's amazing. And, you know, when I look at the number of areas that you're probably having to manage with those 40 people, and then you've got the marketing, and then you've got the budgeting and accounting. Like, do you have people in all those areas to kind of take care of that center?
I have three core people who do all of that kind of stuff, and they're amazing. They do like operations and accounts, or accreditation and policy. So I have that. I also have an advisory board of, but at least 7 to 8 amazing women who have worked with me for a minimum of 5 years, who also helped to navigate the Institute. Then I have a board of directors as well. So I don't feel like it's just me. You know, I'm getting this feedback from all different levels, and I have the talent to also make things happen. And I'm not a red tape person. In fact, people want to slow me down. They're like, no. Wait, what about this? What about that? What about this? I'm just like, oh, that's an idea. Let's make it happen today. But there's something else I wanted to say that also is really, really important. And I hope all of the training schools have this. We have 2 student reps for every cohort. And their job is to tell us how to make the program better and what's working. So they also really inform the changes.
Wow. That's amazing. Did you have any leadership and development experience coming into this? Zero, the big zero, if he's holding up with her. The thing I know to be true about you is that you are a visionary and that you don't have fear. You're just like, okay, I see that. That looks good. Let's move forward. Let's do it. You're kind of fearless.
In my professional life.
We all have our things, right?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. And do you ever get exhausted? I mean, when, just from listening to what I just heard, I'm like, wow, I know from also being a school director how much time and energy all of that takes. Like, do you get completely exhausted by it?
Of course I do. I wonder if you feel this way. You know, work, because I've really been asking myself this question a lot, you know, I'm looking at 50 in 2.5 years, which I can't believe, you know, I can't believe how the time's gone by. And I'm looking at, you know, energy levels do change from when I started this. And I ask myself, what depletes you the most? And it's not the creation of any of these projects. The only thing I find depleting are challenging interpersonal connections, which are inevitable. You can't have 40 people working for you. And actually, we get along fantastically. 3 like full-time people, hundreds of students, and, you know, without there being interpersonal challenging dynamics. And I want to reschedule. And that is what tires me out. Like so many people that work in this field, I'm sensitive. I don't have a thick skin. And so when those things become difficult, that's when I feel depleted. Otherwise, I just feel ignited by all of this.
I am exactly the same. Like, I just feel passionate about all of it. But like you, I'm a highly sensitive person. And those people who are unhappy or, you know, whatever they're bringing forth, like, that's the real drain. I was just talking to my cousin about this today. She's like a business coach. And she said, why don't you hire somebody else to do that part for you? You know, people bring complaints and critiques. And do you think you could hire somebody to do that? Or do you feel as the leader of this giant bird flying through the air, do you have to be the head of it and say, nope, the bottom line stops with me, and therefore I need to take that on?
Well, I definitely have somebody. We have like a support email where if you have a complaint or grievance or anything, you go through that. Not if you're a member of my team, because that would operate more directly to me. And so if it's minor, we have so much governance at this point because of that person, who's amazing, that we have a methodology for dealing with a lot of things. And so that takes the pressure off me. But when it's bigger, yeah, it has to be me. I think there is something about a person that does become a leader, and I'm not patting myself on the back at all, because, you know, I'm not saying I'm any better than anybody else, but that is a kind of job, is that you kind of can sense the bigger picture and what might be necessary to manage the big challenges, how you have to come at them, even if you're frightened. And when everybody else is saying, oh, don't worry, just it should be like that, I recognize that if we don't sort of shore up this issue and that in this particular way, we're not going to be okay. So for that stuff, yeah, I feel like it falls on my shoulders. And to just give you an example, you know, we're having problems recently with venues. There's been so much shifting because of the online stuff. And I have a great person looking for them, but ultimately it sort of falls on me to go there and to speak to the actual like huge organizations that run these major buildings and say, listen, this is what we need. This is who we are. This is what we can bring you. This is what you can bring us. So it depends. I guess that's a long answer to the question, but I really think like for those in the teaching space, you can have sort of pro forma responses to certain complaints on somebody who deals with it. But then when it's about like the bigger cracks in the potential foundation, it has to be the leader. I have not found that that can fall to somebody else.
Absolutely. Are you someone that loves to be in tune with the cycles of nature? Well, there's something I've been wanting to sponsor for a long time, and I finally got my act together to do it. And that is that we would have community celebrations, reflections, meditations, where we come together every time there's a new moon and a full moon. This is something that really resonates with my heart, because every time I look into the sky and realize that we're getting close to a new moon or a full moon, I have this interest internal urge to kind of set some intentions and move forward in a new way. And I would like to share that with you, and I would like our community to kind of have that very natural marker in time every couple of weeks. So for the months of June, July, and August of 2024, this is going to be completely free. It's a beta test. We want to see how it goes. We want to see if you like it. We want to see if you show up. And basically, it will be on Zoom. We'll do about an hour of meditation, of education, of journaling, of connection. And we'll just have those markers in time every couple of weeks. And if it goes well, and we all want to continue after June, July, and August of 2024, we will continue. So we hope to see you there. You can look in the show notes for more information. Well, thank you for going on that tangent with me, because I think at least what I'm hearing is here in the United States and in Canada, those are a lot of the program directors that I talk to. They're really struggling with these issues that you're speaking of. And then with the recent change that IAYT has recently unveiled, I'm not sure if you're aware of that, they're having basically a special type of program only for licensed healthcare practitioners. So you have your licensed healthcare practitioner plus a 300-hour training, and you get to be an IAYTQ. I think that's what it is. Don't quote me on that. And I think a lot of the 800-hour programs are really suffering, because here they've built the foundation for the last 15, 18 years. And it kind of feels like, you know, things are getting pushed towards licensed healthcare practitioners, and that the yoga therapy may be, you know, not as in depth. It may be more westernized. It may be more medicalized. It may be more colonialized, is what people are saying. What do you think of that? Because you've essentially successfully brought your program into a more Western model.
There's so much to say in that. You know, the colonialization piece, I really struggle with in terms of answering questions around that. That's an area that I sit with without an answer inside myself, to be really honest, Amy. It's so, so, so complicated. Maybe I'll get to that last, if at all, if I feel that I can. I think programs suffering because there are pathways also where licensed health professionals do not need to go through the normal pathways that these organizations have set up can be really problematic as well. And I'm conscious of the fact that IAYT set up this program. I slightly have a different way of looking at the entire equation. So first of all, ironically, we were building, before they made that announcement, another program just for licensed mental health professionals that we're in the middle of doing, with the intention of having that accredited through the Royal College of GPs, which will be more meaningful in the UK anyway than IAYT. And it's a nationally regulated body, not an independently regulated one.
You clarified that the Royal College of GPs is like offering continuing education units or CEUs.
Yes.
Okay.
What we call CPDs. Yeah, exactly. But it would be like an actual certification. That's what we're looking for. We haven't created it yet, but that is something that is in our like summer plans, so to speak, the actual creation of this. I'm not of the belief though, and that doesn't get yet to the medicalization of yoga. That's, to me, these are two different topics. That if health professionals are becoming yoga therapists through this pathway, that yoga teachers that go through this whole training are not going to be able to offer something. Because when you do that, the scope of practice for a health professional that also has yoga attached to it is still within their bailiwick specifically. Like, you're not going to be a physiotherapist and then say, ha ha, no, I'm just a yoga therapist. You know, you're going to say, I'm a physio that also has this piece. And I believe that yoga therapy, actually without that, spans so many different scope of practices, so that somebody who's fully trained in 800 hours or more has unique things to offer that a shorter program can't. But what that physio can do that a yoga therapist who's not a physio can do is focus on the musculoskeletal elements at a more profound way. Or somebody who is a psychologist, you know, can focus on the mental health or psychotherapist components in a more profound way, but they won't then have the anatomical elements that somebody who did the 800 hours does. So I actually feel like it is going to lead to the elevation of the whole profession. And through all these movements where people have felt threatened over the years, including here, when things move more into the medical realm, I've only seen yoga therapy grow overall. Because for me, it's about the fact that there isn't a recognition of this field.
Yeah.
And in terms of the medicalization, there's just going to be different strands of how yoga is offered. And this is probably not a popular view, you know, but I lived in Buddhist monasteries for 3 years. And so I'm, you know, a white Jewish woman who feels very Buddhist, like my whole belief system and value system is associated with that. And I just feel like being able to connect into those things is much more important than whether or not I'm speaking in a way to somebody else that is in their value system rather than in the specific value systems associated with, you know, Theravada Buddhism. And I have a master's degree as well in Buddhist studies. I just look at the suffering of the world. That's where I'm looking. And I do see the world as Maya as well. So I think we definitely need to honor all of the origins. But I think, what is yoga but alleviating suffering? So I know some people aren't going to like that answer, but I want to be true to what I believe.
First of all, I want to honor you for speaking your truth, because anybody listening to this, that could start a firestorm. That is a very controversial thing that you just said. And a lot of people wouldn't have the guts to get on a podcast and speak their truth, knowing that a lot of people may not like that answer. And I have been watching this unfold, and if we are not willing to speak our truth and say we are here to alleviate suffering, it just feels to me like there's becoming more and more and more suffering and more division in the yoga field. And that's not to spiritually bypass anything, but it's to say, wait a minute, let's just take a time out and pause and look at the real goal of yoga, and that we can each serve to reduce suffering in the way that our gifts are there to be used to serve.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, Amy, as you're talking, I think also it really brings me back to my own journey, which is, so I went to Asia, Southeast Asia specifically, without planning to, and lived in Buddhist monasteries and ashrams for 3 years following significant mental health issues where I was having suicidal ideation. It was like, I'm going to choose this or I'm not going to continue. So it was easy to devote my entire life to that because I had nothing else that I was focused on. And by the way, it's free to live in those situations on donation. When I came out and I started teaching yoga full time, and I was sharing it from that perspective to people in my yoga class because they said, how did you come out of your suffering? And my answer was a very monastic one. And I would refer directly to texts. I alienated people who were devastated, who had really big problems. And, you know, my own spiritual life is deep. If I'm going to go on a retreat, I want to go into one in an ashram. I don't want to go on one where people drink in the afternoon. And I want to listen to the sutras and the texts. But also, I grew up amongst so much mental suffering with my family, with myself, with my community. And if by talking in that way, those people sort of walk backwards and then run around, and what am I doing?
Right. Meeting the students where they are in their suffering.
Yeah. And if that means that somebody's going to come to, you know, a yoga therapeutic practice offered by a physician who isn't going to talk about the fact that this particular teaching comes from this particular sutra or the Hatha Yoga Pratipika, but actually they're going to be better for the world, I just can't imagine any of the ancient yogis saying, no, no.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if I insulted anybody because it's not my intention. I have so much reverence for all of the masters that have taught me and the masters that have taught them and, you know, back into time.
Well, and I think this does tie back into colonialization, and, you know, I'll take it out if you can join in if you want. But the truth is, we're not making a bunch of money. We're not, people might think Heather's running this big school. She must be making bank off this. And I know you, I don't know your finances, but I know that you are putting money back into the school to grow all these amazing things that you're doing. It is an act of service. Like, you are using your life force to grow this thing to help humanity. You're not banking a bunch of money. And so I just want to be clear about that, because I think people might look at you and think, well, look at her. She's probably taking in $200,000 a year or something. It's like, no, I don't think so.
I mean, we became a non-for-profit. And also, we recently, my board of directors and the advisory board looked at how much we charge for our programs. And they said, Heather, you need to increase it by £2,000 per person for everything. And I said, we can't, because we'll just make it impossible for the right people to come. You know, I could have taken a path where I would have made a lot more money. You know, my father wanted to give me his law practice and retire, and I would now be retired. I did not choose that journey.
That's actually kind of impressive to say, you know what, I'm going to go do something that has meaning and purpose and is going to reduce the suffering in the world. Because as you said, maybe you did grow up with some affluence, and look where it got you. It got you to a place where you didn't want to live on the earth.
So let me re-say it then. So yes, you know, people may also, you know, perceive in general, even when I say that, you know, this is a big business. But I took a very different path in my life than I could have. I was unhappy. I was in a community of affluence. My father had a law practice that he wanted to give me as soon as I would graduate from the law school I never went to at the age of 24. I would have long been retired at this point. And I chose a different path, one, because I did not feel that I was okay in that world, and two, because I didn't want that to be my life's purpose. So absolutely, money is not my driver.
Yeah.
It is to continue to release my own suffering, because I'm not perfected, and doing this work helps me do that. And to understand, after having acute mental health issues, how much that hurts, and to try to help others. And I can do that better by offering a training than individual clients. I learned that, and that's my dharma.
Can you walk us through that? Because I think many people who see groups or individual clients, they kind of feel like, oh, the next step is I should offer a training. And those are like two really different things. One is more of a clinical, you know, right there, one-on-one with the people. And the other one is like this huge leadership position that we've been talking about. And I think they're entirely different skill sets. So how do you know that your dharma is the leadership position instead of the more clinician type?
One, I knew it intuitively, but also when I became a yoga therapist, I was seeing private clients and I was working with groups, first of all. And I started to learn that working with groups, there was better outcomes from the people that I worked with, because I was better at that. And then I learned I was good at codifying things while having them flexible. Like, I could create programs, and actually those I felt that I was working more effectively with people than my counterparts that might have been working one-on-one with others, that my strength was in that. And I realized also that I really like to give people the skills to give to others a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. And so that started just happening naturally. And people started to ask me, can I train with you? Can I train with you? So also people were telling me that I was better at that. Mm. You know, my private clients were saying the same. You know, I'm feeling better. Can I train with you? So I guess it's a combination of feeling more comfortable in that space and also having people come to you and saying, I want you to be in this space for me. I actually did not create a training school because that was a vision in my mind. It just happened because people kept saying to me, can we learn to teach these courses that you're teaching? So my first trainings were just in particular codified programs that I offered. And then it grew from there. So it was very much responsive.
Could you have even imagined back then where you would be right now? Like,
no.
It's mind blowing.
You know what? I have no idea. Like, you know that question you get asked in interviews, what would your life look like in 5 years? I have never been able to say that, except when I thought I would be a Buddhist nun. If you asked me at the age of 24, I would have said, shaved head, living hair, hopefully close to enlightenment.
Mm.
That exception? No. I have no idea.
You know, I'm sure you're still doing the work, the spiritual work, but how hilarious that you're running this big organization, you know, instead of sitting there on your cushion. So what advice would you give to our audience, those who are looking for their special way to serve? I mean, when I hear you, it sounds like you just listened to your heart and took the next step. And here you are doing your service to the world. What would you tell people if they're not able to find theirs or they're feeling lost?
It's such a big question because I've always been able to trust the universe. And I feel like I have these forces around me telling me, when you said that to me, I have little lights actually moving around my visual spectrum. I feel like I have a guiding force. And I feel like most of us do have that guiding force. Possibly the reason that I connect into it so much is that at an early age, I chose to leave the world that I was in and travel from the age of 17. And so without a plan, without like, you know, I mean, really travel, going to hostels, having no idea what I was going to do from day to day. And I think in that kind of reality where you pull yourself so significantly out of where you were before, you open yourself up, first of all, for other forces to come in. And I do believe that they're there. And then there is this sort of sense of just trusting, I guess, that if you follow what you believe to be right, if you really, really do, that things will be okay. But that is a dangerous philosophy for me to peddle. I don't want to promise anybody else that. I think we actually all have our own realities and our own life lessons. And one of mine is trust in what you know and take risks. But if I had to say one thing, Amy, it would come back to leave your environment, if you could, like 1 or 2 months, and live in a way where you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, even if you think you're too old to do that, you know, because usually that's something you do in your 20s. And don't go and stay in a luxurious hotel when you do that. Get down with the people, with the other travelers, and let life happen to you. Don't know what's going to occur tomorrow. And you will meet forces and things that you don't expect. And then, of course, there's all of the meditating and filling your intuition. But I think that is not something that's spoken about enough, that piece of coming out of where you came from and all of those dynamics. And I did that from very young.
Yeah. I think a version of that, if you can't actually leave your home and travel, a version of that is to, and again, this is a dangerous thing to peddle, but to let go of those things you think you have to keep doing that you really hate doing and that are killing you, to just say, okay, I'm going to open my hand a little bit and kind of let go of some of those. And, you know, you let go of one trapeze, you haven't grabbed the other one yet, you're kind of hanging in the air, but you're open and receptive and let life hold you. And again, I mean, I've had times I've done that where it has not turned out well, but that's okay too.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly believe that. I wish I had more of an answer for everybody else, but that's the best that I can do.
I actually loved part of your answer that each one of us has a blueprint that we come in with, things that we're going to learn here, gifts that we have, challenges that we have. So maybe it's not even possible for one person to answer that question for another, right? That, you know, we each have our own timeline, we each have our own reality, and we each have all this experience that has come with us to this moment. So of course, for you, this is what works for you, but maybe for someone else, that's a totally different pathway.
Yeah. And I think it's very, very difficult to discern when you're getting it right in your life as well. But I think that mindfulness helps. If you keep watching what you're doing, and when sort of the universe opens up a little, and you hold the view that there is sort of like a pattern and a dharma rather than everything's random. In that case, there's no point in, you know, being involved in this sort of stuff. But if you are mindful and you watch, when I do this, when I interact with the world like this, when I think in this way, when I act in this way, this is what arises for me, then you can start to build up trust in your intuition of how to work in the world.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, my husband and I are complete opposites. He's a Pisces, I'm a Virgo. Like, and I see that playing out. His version of reality is different than my version of reality. And the things that happen to him would never happen to me, and vice versa. Like, we each have our very own way of operating in the world. And if either of us tries to do what the other one is doing, it never works out. You know, so it's been like a laboratory. Our marriage has been a laboratory to watch that play out. It's fascinating. What would you say to someone who's just starting to try to figure it out?
Well, I think go and find an inspirational speaker. Pick up a few different books and find who really speaks to you. And don't go with the first person you've read or the first lecture that you've been with. And don't go with the idea that somebody's going to fix your entire life and you can just bow down at their feet. Say, I'm going to go to a few beings that I've heard are wise, that either speak or write from my friends. Read a few different books so that you have some sort of comparison. Use a few of their different techniques for meditation. And then kind of settle into, this one makes more sense. I love that the Buddha always said, at least that's what we think he always said, do not take what anybody else says to you to be the truth. Be discerning yourself, listen to wise beings, and then check it out. So, you know, if you have a friend, for example, who you think they have some wisdom, ask them for two books, and then ask another person, and then ask another person, and read those books, listen to a few YouTube lectures on recommended people, and then have that moment inside you where you're not like, okay, I needed something deeply and somebody finally gave me an answer, I'm going, where you're like, yes. Mm-hmm. That happened to me with Buddhism. I never ever needed to believe in anything that Theravada Buddhism taught. It was like listening to my own mind tell me what I already knew, but just giving me more information as to how to go forward with it.
Yeah.
And I investigated many different systems of self-development before I came across that one.
I love that. It was like listening to yourself, tell yourself what you needed to know. Like, that's how I feel, right? That's how I feel about Patanjali Yoga Sutra. Like, it just makes sense to me. So,
yeah.
So Heather, we're coming to a close. What else did you want to share with us today? I feel like we kind of went on the personal transformation and growth path. We didn't really have a plan for this talk. Is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't questioned you on?
Well, I'd just like to kind of continue on this. You know, when you have the courage to be able to do some of the things that we're saying, you add to that whole pool in the world. And it's not like I'm saying that this world is ever going to be devoid of its suffering and its greed. But as you do this, you add to it. We all have the capacity to influence each other dramatically. And we don't need spiritual belief to tell us that. You know, Marco Iacobodi, who does amazing work on mirror neurons, talks about that. Like, simply my facial expression will have a profound impact in how your brain feels.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like, really. And so if you start to live from that place, you help other people in your world to live from that place. And we need more of that. And maybe that's the best that we can do. And I would also say, don't look at somebody else and try to be them. Like we talked about, how do you give advice? How do you know to be this and to be that? As Oscar Wilde said, be yourself, everybody else is taken, you know? So I know it's sort of like trite because that's a common phrase, but you have your unique thing to bring to the world. And I'm speaking not you to Amy, but to like the universal you, to everybody listening. And you need to trust in that. You need to uncover that.
I agree with you. And I have this year-long business course that helps people do that. And I would say about 50% of the people, it's just really hard work for them. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or I'm not sure why, but the things you're saying are not easily uncovered. And they're trying. I see them giving effort.
Well, maybe I need to think more deeply about, you know, what is the pathway for people that don't operate in the way that I do, the students that don't come to me? How do we reach them? Maybe there needs to be a systemization then of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know?
Like, another idea for a school in your head. No, but I think you're right. I think that if we keep reading and listening to podcasts and finding philosophies, we just have to keep walking down that path, or they do. And at some point, they will find the thing that resonates with them. So I guess we just keep walking forward.
Yeah. And you know what else? So many things just came to me, but I know we're coming to an end, so I'll be brief. One is that if you make a decision that every morning you're going to meditate for 10 minutes, then you're going to do pranayama, then you're going to do asana, then you're going to make your green tea, then you're going to shower, then you're going to start work. If you just build discipline, simply that, a spiritual discipline without even knowing if it's all the right things to do, you're cultivating an aspect of your mind that becomes stronger and will eventually have the power to see other patterns of mind. Discipline is a huge part of any Eastern spiritual tradition. And the other thing is that somebody said to me, how do you know what is the right thing to do in this moment? How do you know? How do you know? How do you know? And I said, well, I'll tell you one thing for sure. Cultivating patience to be with the emotions that you feel is never going to go awry. I'm not saying you should be complacent, but doing that in this moment is always going to be the best decision. Learning to bear, not learning to bear any kind of abuse, but learning to bear your internal experience will always serve you and help you grow.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree with both the discipline and the patience and the willingness to be hurting and to be okay with I'm human and I'm hurting right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for coming today and telling us about all of the exciting things that Minded Institute has happening. We'll have you on again in a year and see how that's all played out. And thank you for your wisdom and sharing with us your thoughts on leadership and basically how you have come to be true to yourself and share your gifts with the world. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Amy. And I always love listening to you. And you sort of just kind of like bring me into things that I normally wouldn't say.
A gift.
Yeah. Enjoy that sharing. You're a fantastic host. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Heather, for sharing your wisdom with us. And it's really vulnerable. After Heather and I stopped the interview, she said, oh my gosh, was that okay? Was that the worst interview ever? I said, absolutely not. I said, our listeners will love it because of the vulnerability, because of having no idea where this conversation is going. It feels like you're on the edge of your seat. What are they going to talk about next? Like, to not have a plan, but to trust each other enough that we're going to care for one another and we'll work it out and we can edit it if we need to. That's a beautiful conversation that I hope you enjoyed being a part of. To me, that's the kind of girlfriend conversation that I want to have multiple times a week with my close friends and just be real with each other and admit our flaws and put down the mask and try not to be pretending we're perfect, to just kind of get into the relationship and say, hey, here's what's happening for me. How about you? How do you do it? This is how I do it. Oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I should try that. So I hope you enjoyed that. And, you know, I'll be vulnerable right now and say that one of the areas that I am moving into are these therapeutic yoga series at the University of Minnesota. And again, I had no idea where these things were going to end up, or I still don't know. I just knew that when they told me, like, okay, we'll let you try this. We don't know if it will work, but we'll let you try it. They told me a number of participants that I needed to bring in to make it happen. And that number in my mind was impossible. I was like, I have no idea how that's going to happen. No idea. But I had a heart for the work. I felt like I want to do therapeutic yoga for low back pain, for neck pain, for upper back pain, for insomnia, for anxiety. I want to teach people that. I want them to suffer less. So I'm just going to do it. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It'll be fine. You know, it has so worked out. We are in our first series here in April 2024, and we have 130 people doing the low back and hips series for a month. And then in July, we have an upper back and neck series that people are already signing up for. And I would love for you to consider that. I'll put it in the show notes. And then in October, we're doing insomnia and anxiety kind of together. And so this is one of those things that I had no idea if it would work. I had no idea where I'm going. And I just decided, like, okay, I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other and see what happens and stay close to my inner voice. And I trust myself to make a good decision at any particular point. A decision needs to be made. I don't have to know how it's going to end up. And so that's the path. I've had a few other things happen exactly like that. We have our Monday night yoga therapy clinic that involves continuing education units. That's really taken off. We're getting about 40 people a week in that one. And again, like, I didn't really have a plan for that. It was just, I had a heart for that work and I decided to give it a try and just kind of step forward one little step at a time. So that's what I would leave you with, is find out where your heart is, find out what makes you excited, and then just start stepping in that direction and see what happens. So, okay, everybody, have a great week and we will see you soon. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We want to remind you that you can always go over to YouTube and see the video versions of almost all the podcasts. However, we do reserve the most recent video production for our Patreon members. Our Patreon members help to support this podcast, and we'd love to invite you to be part of that community also. They get free gifts every week, yoga nidras, and all the newest content before it comes over to YouTube. So find us on Patreon. It's The Yoga Therapy Hour and Optimal State, and we'd love to have you support the show. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.